ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the UI Breakfast Podcast. I'm your host, Jane Portman, and today our special guest is Christoph Engelhardt from Germany, the founder of LinkSpy and the author of SaaS Email Marketing Handbook. And today, surprisingly, we're going to talk about email marketing. Hello, Christoph.
Hi, Jane. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for making it today. Did I pronounce your last name right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Great.
So we're going to start with a blitz questionnaire. Just learn about you briefly and then dive into email marketing. Sound great?
Perfect. Yeah.
Fantastic. So, Christoph, what do you do for a living?
I have a day job. It's a management position in the public sector. So that's where I spend my days, and then at night I am a founder. So I founded LinkSpy, and I have another SaaS application for the, it's an appointment reminder service for the German market, and that is, on the back burner. It's just coasting. I lost interest in it.
Mm-hmm.
And so LinkSpy is my main income on that, like with the side projects, and I also wrote a book this year, so that was my big goal of making something new, learning something new. I wanted to write a book, and here I am.
I wonder what made you focus on email marketing.
I saw quite some success, quite a bit of success with email marketing for LinkSpy. So trip emails worked really well, and all the other lifecycle emails worked really well. And back in 2013, I worked for Moz. Back then they were called SEO Moz, and they changed names when I was there to Moz. And I worked on a like a little project. One of my little projects there was an email that managed to lower their churn rates, their 30-day churn rates, by almost 40%. So that was a big success. So I kind of like email marketing. That's it.
Okay. How did you get there to being a SaaS founder and teaching others things like via books and others? Like maybe some background, education, story?
Good question.
I guess Moz is a good example. So we have some celebrity names in there.
Yeah. So I started programming when I was 14 years old, and I never quite stopped. And then I started my first own side project business without really realizing that I was like making proper money when I was, how old was I? I think I was 20 or so. I'm now 32. So I mainly built websites or coded stuff for other people. And let me think about it. I think it was in 2011 when I started building my first own product, and I started to get intentional about this in a like building a business sense instead of just coding and freelancing, taking money for what I like to do in my spare time.
How would you describe your journey between 2011 and where LinkSpy is now? Or when was it when it was founded?
In one word, interesting.
Interesting.
It was an
great,
interesting journey. And I learned a lot. I learned a lot through the years. When I built my first SaaS business, I wasn't too intentional about the business side back then, because I built a SaaS on the, just because I wanted to learn a new programming language. So, and then I looked for a project that I could do in this programming language, which happens to be Ruby on Rails, in case anyone wants to know that. And I just thought, yeah, I want to do something that's at least possibly that makes some money. So I started building that thing, and then yeah, I built the application, and I didn't really know how to market it, and somehow I still managed to find a few customers. Then I realized that it's a real pain to find customers in Germany. We didn't have Stripe back then, so credit cards were a non-option, and then I lost interest in it, mostly.
That was not about LinkSpy, was it?
No, that was before LinkSpy. And then when I was at Moz, I had this idea of... they were very generous towards me, and like you just taking me on for the 5 months I worked there. And they were a great bunch of people. They are a great bunch of people. And I wanted to give something back, so... In 2013, I worked for Moz. While I was there, I went to MicroConf and I listened to a talk by Patrick McKenzie, and in which he described a certain type of email called, he called it the Get Them Promoted emails. Basically, it's a weekly email that clearly states all the value, the ROI, users get from using your software, so that they can print out this email, go to their boss and ask for a promotion, and the boss will just say, wow, you're making us a ton of money. Yes, absolutely, we'll promote you. And with this idea in mind, I went back to Moz and thought about how I could use that newly learned knowledge to improve one of Moz's biggest problems back then, which was a high 90-day churn rate. Back then, Moz was losing, I think, 4 out of 10 customers in the first 90 days.
Mm-hmm.
And in the first months, it was 15%. They lost 15% of all customers during the first 30 days of the users being paid or... after the user started paying. So yeah, that's when I came up with this idea of an email that you could send, and it did really well. And then I branched out this email into a standalone SaaS application afterwards, after I returned home from working at Moz.
Ah, that's how it works. Very interesting.
Yeah, that's how LinkSpy came to be.
Great. Next question. What does your typical day look like?
Good question. A lot of chaos in the day job, and then when I get back home, I'm pretty exhausted most of the time. I try to rest for about an hour or so, get something to eat, and then I work about maybe an hour or so in the evening, mostly answering support emails for LinkSpy and doing a bit of maintenance. At least in the past year, I didn't do many new features or anything, and the last year was pretty much spend on writing the book.
Mm-hmm. What do you enjoy the most and the least about your founder work?
The most. I have to say that I like the most to go to conferences and meet people and talk to other founders. That's probably the thing I enjoy the most about it. Because founders are driven, they are smart, they are just great to hang out with and talk to.
Yeah, that's how we met, actually,
yeah.
A few years ago at MicroConf.
Exactly.
You're absolutely the heart of the community, and especially European community.
That's not true. I think that title still belongs to Rob and Mike, but thanks.
And what about the least favorite part?
Oh, God. I thought you'd skip that.
No.
At least 4 years, I think it's still marketing.
Uh-huh.
One-on-one marketing is still the thing I enjoy the least about it. Like reaching out to people, asking them for their time, asking them to try links by, to take a look at my book, whatever. I think that's still the hardest part for me.
Yeah, I totally agree. Cold outreach is totally draining my resources too. It's like you feel absolutely exhausted when you need to ask people to do something they don't have to, really. Mm-hmm. Right?
Yeah. But it's also effective, so you can't
right.
skip on it.
Exactly.
That's the hard
what
truth.
What is your next big thing?
My next big thing? Oh my God. I don't know. I should probably make goals for 2017. Seeing that this is now, what, December 20th?
Yeah, 2016. That's when people
yeah.
set goals.
Yeah. To be honest, I was so caught up in the day job and launching the book and getting it out before the new year that I haven't made any goals yet.
Mm-hmm.
I'll probably spend a bit more time with links by next year.
That's a good goal.
Yeah, well, hopefully.
All right, let's talk about email marketing then. And specifically, you know, email marketing is a huge, wide, broad topic. But today we're going to talk about it in relevance to SaaS.
Mm-hmm.
Because software has a lot of specifics, and when I find myself running an email list for my new SaaS, all of a sudden I find that it's totally different in spirit, it's totally different in, you know, tasks. It's all about one thing, and it might be not so entertaining as a content-driven list as I used to have an UI breakfast. So, Christoph, if you look at a typical email list of a SaaS, what would be, you know, main functions of it as opposed to a classic entertainment content marketing list?
I think that one big difference is that you have people who are trying or are in the lead nurturing stage where you try to convince them that they need your product, and a separate part of your list is already customers, so they receive probably tons of lifecycle emails from you, or hopefully they receive at least some lifecycle emails from you, helping them to get helping them through onboarding, helping them to justify the expense for your SaaS application, as for example, like the get them promoted emails that I mentioned earlier.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's one big thing. It's much more event driven for a lot of people on your list.
You just stated one of my biggest dilemmas, like, what do I do with the people who already converted? Shall they keep receiving my content marketing, or shall I like somehow discontinue those campaigns?
It depends. Being a trained electrical engineer, I always tend to answer with it depends.
Great strategy.
Does the content you want to send them provide them value, even though they are already using your product? Do they learn something new that they can change about the way they use your product? Like maybe use it with a different subset of their contacts or do some new magic trick with the software, then I'd say, yeah, you should absolutely send the email to them. On the other hand, if the content you're sending out is such that it's geared towards beginners or people who don't even probably understand that they have a problem and that they need to solve it eventually with your software or in some other way, then I'd say probably not.
Mm-hmm. So these are essentially two approaches to building, to marketing your app. One is with a like zero beginner strategy, and the other is producing advanced tips.
Yeah, I think it's good to have a mixture in your your content, and segment your list.
Right. Let's take a look at your book. You have a few, quite an interesting structure, and you talk about lead generation and converting people. You talk about onboarding users, and then you know, making them grow with like life cycle emails. Mm-hmm. Could you give us a brief overview of these, you know, stages that a SaaS business goes through?
It's more about the stage you find your customers in or your prospective customers in the beginning, right? Because like cold email outreach, which we've already said is pretty hard, is like, it's your first stage to get someone interested in your application or in the problem at first, right? So that's the first stage they find themselves in, the first stage of your funnel. And then there are like different tricks you can use to turn them into trial users.
For example?
One email I like is the sign up abandonment emails, because they're super easy to implement. So typically you have in your SaaS application a two-step sign up process, mostly. The first step is you ask them for their email address and their password. That's pretty common. And the next step often is that you ask for their credit card details. Now, around 60% of people will just drop out of the funnel once they hit the second step. So they will give you an email address, they will give you a password, but they won't give you credit card details. At this point you already have the email address, so the easiest thing to do for you is to just send them an email 2 hours later. If they don't put in their credit card details, just send them an email and say, hey, you started to sign up, you were a bit scared away by the credit card details, here's why we need them, blah blah blah, please sign up, please continue your sign up process here, and have a link there, and this will magically increase your sign up or your visitor to try conversion rate by roughly 15% or so. Mm-hmm. It's super easy to implement. It probably takes you 30 minutes or so. And it's a 15% gain.
Sounds great. What about other steps that go after lead generation? I was asking you, hoping for a brief overview of the whole process of the life cycle, so that you can give our listeners an idea,
okay,
like how these emails, you know, dramatically differ depending on the lifestyle stage.
Okay, so when you just do cold outreach, you probably have a templated outreach email with hopefully a few follow-up emails, and it's nothing fancy. you just say that you that this is your company, this is the problem you solve. If they want to learn more, they can click on the link. And when they click on the link, they'll get to a page where you describe the problem, talk a bit about that there's a solution, and make them sign up for your mail, for your proper mailing list. Not your outreach mailing list, but your proper trip email lead nurturing list. And in the lead nurturing list, you'll start with like giving them some basic information about the domain. So, for example, with LinksBuy, I talk about the importance of links for getting ranked in Google, the difference between a good backlink and a bad backlink, then how to do outreach so that you get email, that you get additional links. And then eventually I talk about a more advanced technique on finding really good websites where you want to get a link from. So I explain how LinksBuy works behind the curtains. And then in the last email, I just ask them to sign up for a trial and start using LinksBuy.
Do you have any major, you know, marketing happening on the background, like consistent flow of articles, or is it just a simple thing that you can build and it's reusable all the time because it's a one-time campaign?
It starts as a one-time campaign consisting of 7 emails delivered daily. So once you sign up, you'll get an email every day for 7 days straight. And if you don't convert into a trial user at this point, you'll just get funneled to a list of evergreen content where we will just send you an email, I think, every 7 days or every 2 weeks with some content I've written in the past just to keep you kind of engaged. And I'm never pushing you to try the software again. I just hope that some people will eventually be convinced that they need the software.
Okay, so once once the lead is converted into a trial, what do you do next to use that time frame to make them a paid user?
I try to help them get on board by sending them emails that tell them about specific features and in LinksBuy, how to use them, how to go about link outreach. And then I just tell them when send them a few emails right before the trial is ending, so just so they know that they will be charged in 2 days. Yeah, that's about it.
Could you elaborate a little bit more about the onboarding part of the emails? Because generally speaking, it's a huge help because a large number of users churns during their trial period just because they abandon the app. Besides being merely reminders, what can you do to help onboard people with emails? Describing specific features, you mentioned that.
You have to. So the very first email is sent immediately after you sign up, and it's just one little question. I just want to know what they are hoping LinksBuy will accomplish for them or for their clients. So I just want to know what their motivation was for signing up. Just to learn more about my customers. That was the first part. And then the rest of the emails is, yeah, you need to identify a feature that really helps them get value from your application. So what part of your application do they have to use in order to be really successful? And for LinkSpy, this is actually sending outreach emails through LinkSpy. Mm-hmm. So that's the feature I'm pushing. I'm monitoring the usage, whether or not someone sends emails through LinkSpy, mm-hmm. and thus outreach. And if they don't, I nag them about it.
So I think this was called something about shiny happiness moment or something like that by Patrick McKenzie, and also called customer success metrics in other places, right? So you're okay. Focusing on those, right?
Yeah, kind of. I use the term minimum path to awesome, and I don't know who coined that
term.
That's
great.
But I like it. I wonder who coined that term. It definitely wasn't me, so I don't want to steal credit. But I like that. It's, yeah, you have to guide your users along that path to awesome.
So once people start using your app consistently, you have a special plan to keep them engaged or somehow, you know, keep up that relationship with them? Because the longer they use your app, the less the chances that they're going to churn. Mm-hmm. Basically. So it's really way safer 3 months down the road than the first month.
Absolutely.
But you don't abandon them with your marketing. What can we do to engage those late users, like devoted users?
I think what I use for LinkSpy is I send them a weekly report on the links they have gained. Mm-hmm. Or their website has acquired, and also on I'm telling them which links their competition has acquired. So
it's informative.
Yeah, it's informative, and on the one side it's here, kind of showing them the ROI of them using LinkSpy. By telling them, okay, you managed to get 10 new links in the past week, and this is mainly because of LinkSpy, because what else could cause you to get more links? Okay, it's hard for me to, honestly, it's hard for me to track whether or not whatever LinkSpy does for them was what caused them to get links.
But at least you can find them. That's already an achievement.
Yeah, so I can tell them that. And I can also tell them, hey, your competition is also acquiring new links, and have a look at them and see if you can kind of inject yourself there so that you get those links as well. Maybe they're one of their competitors managed to get on a list of the top, who knows, 102 SaaS applications in the niche, and they aren't on that same list. So maybe they can just contact whoever wrote the list, mm-hmm. or compiled the list, and just say, hey, we're here. Do you mind adding us? And that's a super easy win.
There is a kind of apps where essentially such, you know, regular reports, for example, weekly or monthly, they become the only way of customer interaction with the app. Is there anything you could recommend about going this way, like treating email as the only interface with the app? Do you think it's a good thing to do?
I think it's one of the most important thing about this is that you have to be aware of that fact. You have to realize for your own application that your users are not using the web interface, but they are still very happy with whatever your product provides because they receive emails. And I don't see many founders being aware of that or being in, and then being intentional about this email as basically a user interface into their application. So for example, off the top of my head, I know at least three different applications that I haven't logged into in the past probably 6 to 12 months. The first one is First Officer IO, which is a good lord. It's a Stripe dashboard, so it calculates all the metrics, how much revenue I made, what my churn rate is, how much new MRR I got in the past 7 days or past 30 days. And I haven't logged in into that application in probably 6 months.
Mm-hmm.
Quite sure about that. And all they do is send me a weekly email, and I'm very, very happy with it. Very happy with it. And then the next one is ChurnBuster.io, which provides dunning for my application. So whenever a payment fails, they register it, and then at the appropriate time, they will remind my customer to update their credit card details. And I haven't logged in the past 12 months. And
so for such apps that run on autopilot, it becomes increasingly important to provide reports, because otherwise the only email would be monthly bills, which is not a great practice, right?
Yeah, exactly. I think so. First Officer is pretty good there because they really send weekly emails. ChurnBuster, on the other hand, I have never received an email from them.
Really?
Not that I remember. I think the last time I was reminded of ChurnBuster was because someone replied to one of the emails they sent, and it ended up in my inbox. And my customer basically said, "Hey, yeah, thanks for the reminder. I'll update my credit card details ASAP." And I'm like, "Huh, why are you writing me?" And then I scrolled down and said, "Oh, yeah, right. That ChurnBuster nagged them." So, good. The thing is still working. I'm happy. But that was very interesting. I think you need to be aware of the fact. You have to think about whether that's how your users really use your application. And then once you realize that, that's what they do. You have to be intentional about it. So I think another company that is not very intentional about this is Amazon. Because when you think about it, you use Amazon to buy something on their website. So that's usually, if you have one click enabled, it's just one click. You search for something, you hit one click, and then all the excitement, like, of when does it arrive? Will I get it before Christmas? Whatever. All this happens through email.
Mm-hmm.
That's the user interface. There. And they do a not so good job about that, in my opinion.
Right. Yeah, but that's the topic of e-commerce. We had an episode about that just about a couple weeks ago. So, that's another hot topic. I wanted to give a brief recap of some ideas from my UI audit book. Because when we talk about the tasks that people do with your app, my suggestion is to split them in three types: proactive, reactive, and analytical. Proactive being, actively doing work, creating something, writing something down using the web interface. Then reactive is when you need to respond to something. And analytical is, just going inside and overviewing the stats. So you can think which of these tasks you can include into emails, and definitely not neglect doing so. For example, including analytical stats into monthly reports is a no-brainer. Mm-hmm. Maybe including a review of your reactive tasks would be great. Or a recap of your creative activities as well. There's a number of things you can do.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have any particularly great companies that do, you know, customer lifecycle stuff and all these things right? Or maybe some inspiring examples?
Oh, good Lord. No, not off the top of my head. I like the reports I get from First Office IO.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, proactive or even reactive? No.
Well, you just have to go by the tasks, like, type. Just in general, what do you think? Which companies are doing emails great?
God. I don't know.
Well, maybe then our users can figure it out themselves. I can recall an example of GroupBuzz.io, I think it was the product, which mm-hmm. like one of the it was one by Alex Hillman and Brad Pauly, some folks from our community. And one of their competitive advantages was the ability to compile comfortable, convenient, timely email reports for the community interactions. Because all current forums provide like either instant spammy notifications that mm-hmm. overcrowd your inbox, or they fail to inform you on time. And they're like... competitive advantage was doing the emails in the right combination and in the right frequency. So without overwhelming, but also providing the information. So it can be as important as a key feature.
Yeah. Frequency is definitely an important issue.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So after we talk about life cycle, what happens when the user churns? This is definitely not a great moment, but what do you do then? Oh, with email.
I think the first thing you should do, especially for an early stage company or product, is you should ask them why they canceled.
Mm-hmm.
Those are the two key moments in where people will be pretty honest with you, is right after they bought from you and right after they canceled. So you should definitely ask them why they canceled, what made them go or change ships or whatever,
mm-hmm.
or abandon ship. That's one really important thing to do, because you have to figure out what causes them to churn so that you can eventually solve that problem. And the other, I mean, there are a few tricks. So what you could do is ask when they reply to this email that you were too pricey for them. You could just offer them to continue the service for 50% less, for a 50% mm-hmm. discount, mm-hmm. which depending on your... attitude towards it mm-hmm. is either very clever or a bit unethical. But it's totally an option, so you should at least consider it for a second. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And especially if they were like on the lowest plan and they didn't even come close to using up all the resources you provide in the lowest tier, then you might as well introduce them to an even lower tier that costs half as much or something, but provides even less resources than your publicly advertised lowest tier.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing you might want to try at least is to upsell them to a different plan.
Interesting turn.
Yeah. It's not easy. Doesn't work too often, so you shouldn't expect a high, really high conversion rate for this. But for some users, they will come, they will try your application, they will say to themselves, yeah, I think this is valuable for me, but I don't have the time to figure out how this works. So when you approach them and offer them to basically use your own application on their behalf, you might be able to upsell them to a done-for-you plan instead of a do-it-yourself plan.
Or it might be an idea for you to offer a concierge onboarding, for example. At least do the custom setup for them, right?
Yeah. Take the friction away, or like honestly just use the application for them, which is what I tried to do for LinkSpy, because with LinkSpy you still have to go into LinkSpy and then do a few searches and then find suitable websites you want to contact for links and send emails and stuff, and it's still time consuming. It's not as time-consuming as when you do everything manually, but it still takes time. So you can offer a done-for-you plan.
Let's talk about the technical stack. For example, I know that regular info product content marketing can be done in MailChimp. What are the typical products for, you know, smarter automation, smarter segmentation that can be applied to lifecycle emails, besides Drip, which is the most popular, I guess?
Oh, God damn it. Yeah. Now I'm fresh out of options. yeah, I was going to say Drip because I really, really like Drip. And another thing that I've seen people use is Intercom, which offers you those, I don't know if there's even a term for it, but those chat boxes or bubbles in the lower right corner on the website where you can just send your visitors a text and then they can respond in a chat window to it. And so Intercom provides those chat bubbles plus email interactions, and you can trigger everything. So you can like really say, if someone is on the highest tier and he has sent 5 emails, then trigger this message via chat. Or if he's not online right now, just trigger an email or whatever. So that's another tool people used.
Okay. All right, let's jump to the book itself. Do you have any discounts for our listeners that they can use to download it?
You can find the SaaS Email Marketing Handbook at saasemailmarketing.net, and I'm going to provide you with a special link for your listeners where they will get a 25% discount.
That sounds great. I'm sure they're quite a lot of founders in the audience who will find it very valuable. Where can people find you personally online?
I still use Twitter. So it's I'm IT Engelhardt on Twitter. It's ITENGELHARDT. And that's about it.
Okay, so if everyone wants to get in touch, they're welcome. Christoph, thank you for sharing your email wisdom today. And I hope book launch keeps going great and LinkSpy sales also go up.
Thanks a lot. Thanks for having me. It's been a pleasure.
Yeah, it was great, and have a wonderful day.